You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
This is that trusted voice, Steve Dotto here for DottoTech. I am glad you're joining us today. I'm sitting here across from my producer, Art Factora. Hey, Art, how are you doing today?
Oh, man, Wednesday. I love this day.
The Wednesday's a good day. Not so good for the folks at Rogers today.
What they do now?
You know, they're starting to really get the heat from the internet community. See, it was released a couple of weeks ago that the worst internet throttler in the entire world is in our home and native land. It's Rogers.
And the listeners figured out and learned what throttling internet-based means.
What does it mean?
It means that they can squeeze and only allow a certain amount of bandwidth to specific homes and businesses.
Yeah, they're basically shutting. They're basically not providing all the bandwidth, the open bandwidth. They're actually throttling back and putting a governor basically on your internet, the speed of the internet connection going into and out of your connection point. And you know who's most upset about this is the gamers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Canadian Gaming Association that actually filed an official complaint with the CRTC. And the CRTC is taking it seriously enough that they've moved the complaint into its enforcement division.
Wow. So those guys were able to get out of their parents' basements and actually go? Or did they just do it online? They must have done it online, right?
I don't know. They might have got out of the basement.
I would like to see that protest. There'd probably be a lot of like Star Trek and Star Wars type garb on if they're going to ever at the art gallery.
And they wouldn't have been protesting during the Big Bang Theory. They can't leave their house.
And probably not a lot of ladies either.
Now, women play games.
True, but would women be that apt enough to go down to the art gallery to protest it?
I think you're being a little bit politically incorrect here.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. I'm not going to, you know, we'll let the listeners
send angry emails.
Call you to task. Here's what's coming up on today's show. We've got Lindsay Smith coming in and coming online, and we have Michael Kozlowski coming. We're going to be talking about ebook readers because, of course, Kobo has announced their newest ebook reader called the Kobo Vox, which is a color edition. We're actually going to be giving one away on the show in the next couple weeks.
Sitting on the desk?
It's the box. The box is sitting in front of me, and we're not opening this one. I have another one at home to open, but this one is not going to be open. This one is going to be given to some lucky listener.
Is that the closest I'm going to get to that?
No, I'll bring in the other one and let you play with it.
Okay.
Yeah, you can have a look at it. But, you know, you've got the Samsung Galaxy Tab identical.
Okay.
Almost identical. Well, not completely identical, but very, very close in a lot of ways. There's lots of little pieces of news this week and lots of little reports coming up. One of the ones that I found interesting was we've done a lot of conversation about the social networking war between Google Plus, you know, trying to horn in and trying to take over a little bit from Facebook. And when it seemed that they were starting to get some traction, Facebook seemed to pull away. Well, it turns out that depending on what device you're on, it speaks to how we look at the world. And Android users are more drawn to Google Plus than our iPhone users who are more on Facebook. I found that an interesting statistic.
That is very strange. Yeah, I can't even guess why either one would be
I think iPhone users are more willing to, they just basically want everything taken care of for them because there's not a lot of tinkering that you have to do with Android. Google Plus, you gotta roll up your sleeves and you gotta set things up yourself. And Facebook is pretty much what you see is what you get. In Android, you do have to roll up your sleeves. If you want to roll up your sleeves, it's Google Plus and Android. If you want the world to be easy and everything to just work, it's iPhone and Facebook. And the other piece of news that really caught my attention this week is it's a 10th birthday. I can't believe it's 10 years old, but Windows XP is actually 10 years old now. Can you believe it?
I remember using it 10 years ago. And then for the last...
And you're still using it. This is the thing about Windows XP is it's the operating system that will not die. And the reason it won't die is Microsoft botched the next version of the software to come out. Vista was not a really good thing. But businesses became so reliant on it. And what we were doing with our computers 10 years ago for business is what we're doing now. All of the change has occurred in our mobile devices, in our handheld, in tablets. But in business, you know, you're still sending and receiving email, you're still doing accounting and inventory management, and all of that stuff worked just fine in Windows XP. The applications work just fine, and so they are holding on to that and staying with that. And even though they might have a little bit newer, faster hardware, maybe a bigger screen, they're still doing the same basic processes. They're still using Microsoft Outlook for scheduling and appointments and email, and that's staying the same. So Windows XP, Microsoft says they're going to cut off support in 2.5 years or so to it, but I wonder if they're going to be able to. It'll be 13 years old when they say they're going to cut things off, but I bet you they extend it.
No, that's when they start rebelling.
Joining me now online is Lindsay Smith from lindsaysmith.com. How are you doing, Lindsay?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing just great. And in the studio, Michael Kozlowski from goodereader.com. Michael, thanks for coming in.
No problem, Steve.
We are going to start things off today by having a chat about the biggest news, I guess, and certainly in the Canadian ebook space in the last little while, is Kobo launching their Color e-reader, which is really more of a junior tablet. But Kobo has released and actually announced and released within about a 3 or 4 week period the Vox e-reader, which is their Color 7-inch tablet, and it's now shipping. So we've got them in our hands. What do you guys think? First of all, Michael, what's your first impressions?
I like it. I find that it's exactly what Kobo needed to bolster their portfolio. They have a number of e-ink-based e-readers, and in order to compete with the Amazon Kindle Fire and, you know, other Color devices such as the Penn Digital Novel that you can get at Future Shop, they needed to come out with this, and they needed to put their own spin on it in order to make it unique in the market.
What about you, Lindsay? What was your first thought?
I like it. I think that it's definitely going to carve a good niche for itself in the marketplace. I think the people that already have a simplistic e-reader, one of the black and white ones, and they're looking for the next step, but they're not quite sold on tablets. I mean, the fact that this one's only $199, it gives them kind of an introductory feel for what a tablet would be like.
Yeah, and this is the thing about the Vox and the Kindle Fire, which is not going to be as appealing a product in Canada just because of the way the Amazon ecosystem's working. But they really are hybrid devices. They aren't ebook readers. They're because they're running the Android operating system and they're Color, they're Wi-Fi capable, they're coming shipping with web browsers and email clients and app stores and the ability to kind of turn them into your very own tablet. So in some ways they're competing, I guess, with Samsung's Galaxy Tab and other devices like that, and certainly to a small extent with the iPad.
Yeah, I mean, it's really what you want the device for. If you're looking for, there's different types of tablets and you would get them for different needs. You would get the Kobo Vox if you wanted a social reading experience. And the Kobo Vox is pretty well one of the best tablets suited for e-readers available to Canadians. Face it, there's a lot of tablets on the marketplace, but a lot of them are overpriced and they don't really do what you need them to do in order for that to get a solid reading experience. With the Kobo Vox, they really put a lot of social media elements in your hands. For instance, they have launched a new service called Kobo Pulse. Mm. And what this does is this allows you to talk with other people in real time that are reading the same book as you. And you could see how many people are reading the book. You can vote up, vote down specific comments. Even it gives you the ability to not read any spoilers. So you wouldn't be able to read any comments by people that are not further in the book than you are.
Mm. Do you like that idea, Lindsay?
I do like the idea. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the traditional book club concept where, I mean, people get together with others in their neighborhood and they talk about they all read a book together and then they talk about it. I've never belonged to a book club, but from what I understand. Any of you guys belong to a book club?
No.
No.
No. What did I understand?
But unlike you, I know that you're not that avid a fiction reader, are you?
No, I like more nonfiction, and I mean I could get into sci-fi once in a while, but that's my nerdy side coming out.
I have gone through periods in my life until very recently where I was an avid reader. I just consumed huge volumes of books, and it's due to not due to my lack of interest in books now, but my eyesight. I have some issues with my eyes. My eyes get tired very quickly, and these sorts of things. So I don't do as much reading now. I'm still consuming audiobooks. At a great rate. So for me, this social component of the of what Kobo is bringing to the table. I think that's a pretty exciting concept, and there's several aspects to that, because the feature you were just talking about, Michael, is only one of two social aspects that Kobo is building into this product.
Right. They're also building Reading Life, which has been available in their iPad and Android apps for quite some time. It basically gives you statistics. It tells you, what your average, page turn rate is, how long it takes you to read a book. It even gives you rewards and achievements. So based on a myriad of factors, what types of books that you read at certain times, how long, has it taken you to read a book from like start to finish, genre-based types of things. And then you could share all those sort of things via Facebook or Twitter. So
I don't know if I want people to know how slowly I read books. That would just make me look silly.
Yeah, you could turn those things off.
It's optional, yeah.
But that whole social aspect of adding extra layers to the reading experience, be it sharing an experience with others or creating some sort of feedback on yourself. I know we did a review on one of the apps called the Good Reader app. I think it's called the Goodreads. Mm-hmm. Goodreads, which is a wonderful app that allows people to kind of keep a diary of all of the books that they've read and keep statistics from that way. Those sorts of things really are enriching the reading experience for avid readers.
I think so. I mean, traditionally reading's a bit of a solitary experience. When you're curled up in a book, late at night or during the day or on the beach or on vacation, it's a solitary experience. Kobo is making reading social. And so, traditionally with book clubs, it's a very, very small percentage of people that actually do it. And Kobo is actually giving that ability to anybody that has their device, which I find is great.
Let's take a look at the difference between the Kobo Touch and the Kobo Vox, since we're just going to talk about their products today. The Kobo Touch retails for $140, and it is a 7-inch e-ink screen. Now, the screen will last, the battery will last for weeks and weeks on this particular item, and it's very, very light. The Kobo Vox, the screen, the battery's going to last you maybe 8 hours of use, but it is a color screen, and it's only $60 more. It's $200. And for that, you get more than color. You get, of course, the whole web browsing experience and email, which I think you can do a little bit of email on the Kobo Touch, but it's not really optimized for that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But you've got much more of the tablet experience. Is the color the key to the Kobo Vox, or is it the Android operating system as far as you're concerned?
I think it's both. Let's talk about Android first. Kobo has maintained, and when we actually visited Toronto and spoke with Michael Cervinius, the CEO of Kobo, he told us before the Kobo Vox was even released that they really were trying to make the Vox an open ecosystem. So you can load any type of Android app that you want via the micro SD card or by plugging into your computer and downloading apps from the internet or installing different markets on it.
That's a concern for me. Now, Lindsay, you've dived recently into the Android world with your new phone that you're so much in love with.
And yeah, I'm using the new Samsung Galaxy. It's actually not the latest version, but it's a Galaxy Inspire, and it's running an Android platform. And I feel like I've completely immersed myself in it. And being an avid iPhone user before, it's definitely been a change, and there's things that I absolutely love about the Android system over the OS, the mobile OS system, but there's definitely differences. But I have to say that, like, if someone took away the Android from me tomorrow, I could easily go back to the iPhone and be just as happy. But I'm definitely enjoying these added features, just things like being able to have a kind of more of a desktop experience on the screen, and then having your apps one layer down.
Well, here's my concern. As far as I'm concerned, your ebook reader is an appliance. It's not a computer, and it's really not a tablet. It's an appliance, so it should be plug and play completely. You shouldn't have to think about what version you're running, what operating system, how much memory you have, in determining which apps you can be running, and that sort of thing. The iPad, for example, if you can find it in the iPads in the Apple App Store, it runs on the iPad. That is not necessarily going to be the case with everything that we look at in the Android App Store on the Kobo Vox, because it's running a slightly older version of the Android OS. So some things won't work. It doesn't have all of the features. So now the user is going to have to determine what works and what doesn't work for them. Is that it's a concern for me? Is it a concern for you?
I wouldn't say it's a concern, but I'd say it's definitely a much more cumbersome process in order to find apps that work on these devices. iPhone has just really simplified the process where you go in and you know whatever app you're going to get on there is a good app. And I find that at least speaking from the phone perspective, that's not always the case. Like I had to search for 5 different apps before I found a good visual voicemail option.
Yeah. And Michael, and let me bring it, rather than talk about phone, let's talk about that and bring it back to the Kobo Touch, which is an appliance. You sign up for their online service. You download a book. There's no worry at all as to whether or not the format of the book is going to work on the Kobo or any of the little apps that are running on it are going to run because it's a closed system. And as an appliance, I think that probably fits a little bit better than I think some people are going to be a little bit surprised by the irregularities that they're going to find in the Vox. Of course, they're also going to be pleasantly surprised by the extra things they can do, but that's the yin and the yang of a device like this.
Yeah, I mean, with the Kobo Touch, you're buying it just to read books. With the Kobo Vox, you're buying it not only to read books, but to do a slew of other things. Like you mentioned, email, web browsing, installing apps. There's pretty well, it's endless with Android. I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of apps available. So you read newspapers, magazines, if you're into reading, but you also play Angry Birds, and other things if you're into games.
There you go. We're going to take a quick break. We've got lots more to talk about as far as the ebook world. There's lots of news on the ebook front, plus we have lots of other topics to cover. We've got Michael Kozlowski from GoodEReader.com. We have Lindsay Smith from LindsaySmith.com. I'm Steve Dotto from DottoTech.com. And art is just art.
DottoTech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for DottoTech? Visit our website at DottoTech.com and click on Contact Us. DottoTech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
In studio live with me is Michael Kozlowski. Not in studio, but live on the phone with me, Lindsay Smith. And Michael, look what I have in my hand. What am I holding?
You're holding an unopened, shiny, new Kobo Vox e-reader.
Guess what I'm not going to do with this?
You're not going to give it to Art.
I'm not going to give it to Art. I'm not going to open it. I'm not going to open it because this is going to some lucky listener. If they drop by our website, they can enter to win the Kobo Vox. Art just put on his headset.
I listen every week. Every week I listen to the show. How am I not a listener?
All right, what have you got? What have you got there in your pocket?
A really horrible old telephone.
No, what's your tablet?
Oh, I do.
What have you got?
I've got a Samsung Galaxy Tab,
which is the exact same as this. If you picked it, you would probably have trouble telling the two apart.
I've got two hands though.
You don't need the Vox.
All right,
but you know what? You quit this job, and then you can enter all you want. I'm not encouraging you to do that, but if you quit the job, or if you get promoted.
I'll tell you by the end of the show.
If you become the master of all things AM650, you can have it. So there you go. There's a career path for you. One of the things that I played with the Vox, which I was impressed with, I didn't think I really needed a color screen for reading books and magazines for books. But with my iPad, I do. I use Flipboard a lot. I browse through web pages and websites, and I enjoy the magazine reading experience and like the color photos. So I'm kind of getting down with the whole idea of color photos and magazines for an e-reader is a good idea. But you showed me kids' books on the Vox, and I started to really like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the key selling points, and it's something that Kobo is taking pretty seriously, that cookbooks, kids' books, content that really comes to life on a full color screen that you don't get with the traditional e-ink experience. They have in many of the kids' books a read aloud feature, and this allows a narrator to actually read the book to your child and highlight the words as it's speaking to you.
Well, you can do that yourself. You can actually record it yourself, your own voice, or is it somebody else that's done it?
It's somebody else.
Oh, that's too bad, because it'd be cool if it was you.
Yeah. They actually have iOS applications that allow you to
read. What do you think about having the kids reading on your tablet, Lindsay? Because
well,
I know your maternal
know.
Instincts are so strong.
How old they are. Just imagine how mucky their little fingers are, and I don't know. It's a $200 piece of equipment.
So you would limit a child's reading on the ebook reader because of grimy fingers?
they ruin it. I mean, they toss it around, break it. I mean, unless it had some sort of protective case on it, I'd be a little bit hesitant.
You know what? I'm going to tell you right now that every single parent out there that gets one of these, if they have a child, they're going to let their kids use it. Because anything that entertains the child is wonderful. But also, just you're just going to love watching your kids interact. Have you seen the viral video? There's a video going around on YouTube, which is of a toddler, maybe a 16, 17, 18-month-old little girl, who is looking at a magazine, a paper magazine, and she is trying to interact with it as she does with an iPad. She's trying to pinch and zoom on the picture, and she's trying to swipe from page to page. She can't understand why it's not reacting the way she expects it to. She understands the iOS interface, but not the interface from the paper interface.
Well, getting back to that whole thing about that Mike mentioned earlier, that you can actually have an app that records how long it takes you to read a book. I can see that really coming in handy for school-aged kids and setting goals for them for them to get faster with their reading.
There you go. So, end of the day, Kobovox, $200. Is it a thumbs up or thumbs down, Mike?
I think I give it a thumbs up. It does have some hardware deficiencies, but you won't really notice that as an average user. What you will use it for is Facebook, email, web browsing, and reading. And so for the price, you can't really go wrong versus so many of the tablets out there that have lower specs and don't do nearly as much as the Kobovox does.
Lindsay?
I definitely agree with Mike. I think that I can really see it being used for in the kitchen for recipes or for magazines, things like that with the full color. I noticed with the screen, if you were reading a novel on it, like you said, Steve, sometimes it's harder to, like your eyes get tired. Mm-hmm. I think the traditional black and white kind of e-ink ones are a little bit easier on the eyes than this one. But if you're using it for bright, colorful, vivid imagery, then absolutely, it's a thumbs up.
I'm going to give it a thumbs in the middle. Here's the reason. I still like my Kobo Touch as an e-reader. I like the lighter form factor. I'm a little bit of I fixate on weight, and this thing is just a little bit too heavy for me, as is my iPad. But if you need a hybrid tablet, I think I'm going to give it a big thumbs up for that. But the other thing is, I think in Canada, we are second-class citizens when it comes to the e-book world because of what Amazon is doing with the Kindle Fire. The fact that we're not going to have access to all of the Kindle Fire's features up here in Canada, especially with their web browsers, their Silk web browser. Michael alluded briefly to the hardware capabilities of the Vox. As a web browser, it's fairly slow and sluggish. It's not really responsive. Whereas all indications are that the Kindle Fire with their Silk web browser is going to be a blazingly fast web experience because of all of the back-end heavy lifting that Kindle is doing that Amazon is doing with their servers to customize the content to display on the Fire. I think that we're not going to have quite as rich an experience in Canada. Having said that, the Vox is going to be as good as it gets for us.
I think so. And there are a lot of other better devices in the United States and coming soon. You're right. In Canada, we really get the short end of the stick with e-readers and tablets. It's partly because of publisher agreements. Most of the top six publishers like Penguin, Simon & Schuster, they have a lot of negotiated rights in the States, and they don't have those same rights in Canada. So if you live in the U.S. and you visit Amazon.com, you get such a huge selection of books to buy, but if you visit Amazon.ca, you're missing out on a ton of content.
Which leads us directly into the next story. Yesterday, Google announced and released and opened in Canada their Google eBook store in Canada. And it launched with thousands of best-selling titles. I repeat that number because it's minuscule. Thousands of titles. Now, to be fair, the titles you're probably going to want to buy are there. The Steve Jobs biography. There's lots of Canadian content there. But down in the States, Google has over a million titles of new bestsellers in fiction and nonfiction work. And in Canada, we launch a bookstore with thousands of titles, and that speaks to those licensing issues, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that speaks volumes on just the current state of affairs with digital publishing, with books. You know, you could walk into Chapters and have the same sort of selection as if you walked into a Barnes & Noble anywhere in the States. The digital world is just so different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this Google eBooks story really accentuates that fact. I mean, I'm pretty happy that Google has finally opened up a bookstore in Canada. I think it's about high time for the big reason that you can get about 2 million free open source books.
Yes, and it does have a large collection. Have you looked at the site yet, Lindsay?
Yeah, I'm just actually looking at it right now.
It's clean. I like the site. You know, when I compare it to the Kobo site and when I compare it to the Amazon site, both of those sites, because they serve multiple masters, are a little bit clunky as far as knowing exactly what you're looking at. When you go to Kobo or to Chapters Online, you know, they sell books, they sell videos, they sell other products, they sell ebook readers. All of that being sold there means that you kind of have to navigate your way through to find the bestsellers and find the books. The same on the Amazon site. Whereas when you go to the Google eBook site, all you see is the books. And the masthead is promoting, in our case, Canadian content. I noticed there's a book by Ron McLean from CBC up there, and there's different Canadian award-winning books being promoted very heavily. So I like the look and feel of the site, and it's a place that I will certainly go to browse. And I think the browsing experience and the kind of leafing through the book experience is going to be quite good at Google site.
Yeah, it's very clean, and that's really what Google's all about. It's just very clean. It's very bare bones, but there's a lot of content there.
And it looks like they are price matching dollar for dollar with what's happening at the Kobo site. The books that I looked at were the exact same price.
Yeah, I mean, Google doesn't really determine the prices. In the digital realm, it's the agency price model. So you have almost the publishers determining the price, and that's to promote an even playing field between different sites and different businesses offering the same book. If one business sold a book at $15 and another one sold it at $10, you would probably buy the $10 version.
I certainly would. Would you, Lindsay?
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, I'm looking at this guy's a little bit more, and I'm confused. I have to say.
What are you confused by?
Well, I don't like the idea of browsing a book online. Like, just from a PC perspective, the layout, just even though it's simple, it's like you're actually looking at a PDF web page or a PDF book page as opposed to just reading it on the web. Like, a lot of the actual book is like in 50% of my screen, and then I have the browser all around it, and I know that you can expand it, but I don't know if I like that.
Okay. Well, it's fair. We'll see how it, you know, if you start buying a few books from it, that'll be an even better indication. But
well, I can see it. I can see doing it from a tablet. Mm-hmm. I can see liking it from that, but not.
And that's what it's got to be optimized for, because most people are going to end up buying these directly from their tablet or from their ebook reader rather than buying them.
Yeah, then I buy it. Yeah.
Good. Let's put the brakes now on the ebook discussion. We've given that a good run, but let's take a look at what's happening in the rest of the world of tech. But first we'll take a quick break. Michael Kozlowski from goodereader.com and Lindsay Smith from lindsaysmith.com. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
It's Movember. Are you growing your mustache, Art?
I've done it twice, and I look so creepy with it.
I think you would look a little creepy with a mustache.
I look like a little kid with a mustache.
Yeah. November should also be mortgage month. Every month should be mortgage month. You should know what's happening with your mortgage. And the best thing that you can do for your mortgage is have a visit to BillyMack.com. That's Billy Mack with an I. Have Bill Macklem take a look at your mortgage and tell you if you are getting the best deal possible and what your strategy should be to make sure that your mortgage is working for you. See, that's what mortgage brokers do, is they look at you as a client and they go and get the best deal for you from whatever lending institution is willing to provide it. It's much better than just going to a single bank and trying to get your mortgage yourself. Billy Mack, Bill Macklin's the guy that's done my mortgages for years. BillyMack.com, Billy Mack with an I.
You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Steve Dotto here with Michael Kozlowski and Lindsay Smith. We've just covered the entire world of ebooks and ebook readers. And I want to talk about some of the other things that are happening in the world of technology. And Lindsay, you were talking to me about a new concept or a new site called, is it Foodie?
Foodie, yes. FOOD.EE. That's the actual URL. So no.com, no.ca. Food.ee.
Now, this comes from a quite a successful company here in Vancouver, the same folks that do Hootsuite, the Twitter client.
Yeah, the social media dashboard. They Invoke Media is the creator of Hootsuite, and they've launched a new product, completely different, and it's location-based food suggestions and online takeout and delivery orders. So it's just launched here in Vancouver, so it's mostly Vancouver Lower Mainland focused at this point in time. But essentially, go to the website next time you're having a food craving and you don't feel like cooking yourself, and essentially it gives you a list of everything that is located close to you. You can view the full menu from Foodie on the restaurant. You can order right online, and it's just a really seamless, cool process.
Now, there are, this is the food and beverage area in the online and social media world is a hotly contested space, and I guess is Yelp kind of the de facto leader at this point in that whole world?
I think so, but to my knowledge, I don't think you can actually order off Yelp, because it's more, and Yelp is good for restaurants and retail and rating and reviews, and Foodie actually ties in the Yelp reviews. So before you go and order online, if you're trying out a new place, you can actually see what other people are saying on Yelp right from within the Foodie website. So
Foodie is really about acquiring food.
Yeah, it's about getting the food, trying new places. It actually has, it's using what I would label as social and search intelligence, where it asks you questions throughout quizzes or little question marks. Like, for example, I'm looking at the site right now, and the Foodie mascot is this little fox, and he says, "Think quick, tell Foodie something." It says, "Are your taste buds well-traveled?" And then it asks you if you love tacos or burgers or chow mein, pasta, sushi, etc. And then it will actually cater food suggestions to you based on the questions that you answer as you're going through the website.
Foodie is just in the Vancouver area right now. It's still in the very early stages of beta, so it's just in the Lower Mainland of Vancouver right now, correct?
Yeah, they're testing it out. They do have plans to roll it out across Canada over the next few months, but they've just launched it within the last couple of weeks, and they're testing it out, getting new restaurants signed up, working out some kind of, I haven't seen any bugs, but, you know, during beta session, they usually work out any bugs that occur, and then they're also, which I really like, taking suggestions from people in terms of features that they want to see incorporated on the website and so on.
So it's really, yeah, it's going to be for ordering in food as opposed to going out to restaurants and stuff, which I think people still use Yelp for. Do you use any of these services, Michael?
I use a service called Yummy Web, and the reason why I kind of like it, it doesn't have any advanced features, but once you place the online order, they actually call the restaurant for you. So usually when I order in, I'm watching the UFC or I'm watching some sort of event where I have like five or six people over, the music's really loud or the television's loud, and so I don't want to have to go into my bedroom and close the door and call and order in. I just want to, "Hey guys, what do you want?" and then place it on the computer, and they take care of everything for me. So,
and you're difficult. I've eaten out with you.
Yes.
You're a difficult person to make happy because you're a very picky eater.
Very finicky.
Finicky. Yeah, that's the word. Yeah.
Well, that's the same thing with Foodie, is the fact that you can actually go in and order from, like, they actually have the menu right on there with the pricing, and you click add. Like right now I'm looking at a place called Bonchez on West Hastings, and I can order a banana walnut Bonchez. I don't know what that is. Truffle.
I see Burnaby. Art's browsing through up on our monitor here, and I see Burnaby Palace there. When we did the old TV show, that used to be our go-to place for Chinese food. So I see. So Art, you're giving this kind of the thumbs up. Art does a lot of food and beverage type stuff, of course, producing the food and beverage show. You giving a bit of a thumbs up at this point?
Yeah, I like the incorporation of pictures and a menu, because the typical Chinese food menu or pizza, it's just the same old thing that they've had for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
The fold-out three-fold or two-fold sheet.
Yeah.
And you don't know. And sometimes you look at the prices and you're thinking, $12 seems a lot for some greasy spoon down the street. But then if you see a picture of it, you're like, okay, well, I'd pay because it looks delicious. And the chef obviously knows what he's doing.
Now, here's the thing that interested me more than the service of the site was, this is the first domain that I've seen, which is a .ee domain. So you're not typing in foodie.com. It's food.ee. So the top-level domain is .ee. What's the story behind that, Lindsay?
Well, what's happened is I just within the last year or in the last little bit, they've CRTC?
No.
CIRA, the Canadian Internet Registration Association, opened up those end domains for people to actually bid on them. So you could buy, the application process, I think, cost about $250,000.
Oh, it's a bit more than registering your regular domain.
A lot more. But then imagine if you own the .ee, you could then be a domain provider and have people register like steve.ee
or Stevie.
So you've got full rights to manage that domain.
This is really designed for that corporate world so that Ford can own the .Ford domain. And that's why it's priced at $250,000 to do this. And these folks are the first ones that I've seen that are kind of taking that to the next level and creating their own for their own brand that way.
Yeah, and I mean, there's local domain providers like webnames.ca that's based out of Gastown, and they're buying, I know, a few of them and releasing them to the public so that you can buy your own. And I don't know what the extensions are that they're using at this point, but they will be releasing some.
It's really going to be interesting to see how people kind of glom onto that. I can remember when the .tv one was released was about maybe 7 years ago, and they were charging a pretty penny. They tried to get us, of course, we did the TV show at the time. They were trying to get us to get .o.tv, but I just didn't see the value in it because everybody looked, you know, as soon as you sat down at your computer, people weren't thinking to go to .tv domain. They thought you'd go to .com and not go to .ca. And
I think
that's
going to change.
It's going to have to change, or this money is not well spent.
Yeah, well, I just think because people are running out of domains to use in the .com world,
it's going
to become so much more common to see different endings after the .. So it'll just be more accepted.
And what's going to be great is all those people who are squatting on domains, who have registered a whole bunch of domains and just squat on them. They're going to see the value of their squatted goods being eroded, and that's kind of a good thing because anybody who's had to deal with any of them is, you know, they're not easy to. It's just a kind of a distasteful practice, and I say that only because I wasn't smart enough to think of squatting on a whole bunch of really good domains.
How many domains do you own, Steve?
I own just about a dozen.
A dozen?
Yeah, not that many.
Maybe about 20, 30.
Okay, I beat you guys both. I have 56.
56.
She doubles us almost.
Art, how many do you have?
Artfactora.com. Now everyone's Googling that.
Yeah. Now, would you pay $250,000 to have art.factora?
Well, I don't. I guess the only people I could sell that out to is the handful of family members who used to share the last name.
Yeah,
I don't think I'm going to make that money back.
Squatting on the Factora name might not be good biz.
How about maybe .art?
.art?
Yes.
.art would be a very good one.
Do you have $250,000 I can borrow?
Yeah, just a minute. I'll have to look in the tray of my car. I got a little bit of change out there. Okay, well, that's going to be an interesting thing for us to follow. Here's the story that caught my attention more than any this week was was Apple has been making noise. The rumor mill has been a buzz that Apple TV is going to become a reality. We're not talking about the Apple TV, the little box, but Apple's actually going to make a put down in the front of your living room TV. And I always was thinking that's not something that I just could never figure out why. But apparently it was one of Steve Jobs' passions to crack the code of what makes TV and make the TV better. And now we're starting to get the first hints of what that might be. And it's relating to Siri. You're going to be talking to your TV. That's good. He's changing the remote. That's the whole idea is the Apple TV is going to be something that you talk to. So the fight over the remote won't be there. It'll be change the what sports are on, and then it'll come up with a list of. Do you like that, Lindsay?
I just picture kids in the living room yelling at each other, yelling at the TV, and it just turns into one big fighting match. Goodness.
There's certainly going to be, I think that there's going to be places in certain situations where it's not going to work very well. And in large family situations, it's probably not. But boy, oh boy, just sitting at home by yourself or with your partner and being able to say, what movies are on? And have it come up with, and have it sort through the list so you don't have to scroll through that irritating list. And please record this. Those sorts of things are going to be pretty compelling.
Absolutely. I think, too, Apple has actually made a huge influence on televisions. I was just doing a review on Samsung's 8000 series, which is a smart TV, and it's a whole app interface, and that app interface comes on their Blu-ray players as well now. And so it's this concept of not just turning on your TV and letting it play and flipping through channels, but actually having a guided experience with applications on there, with Facebook tie-ins and all sorts of stuff. So it is truly all merging together in the same way we've seen. We've moved away from having content for a PC and content for a MacBook and content for your mobile phone and tablets where everything's in the cloud and it's all just syncing to all of those devices. I think TV is just essentially going to be another one of those devices where stuff is streamed to.
And when we think about how apps are going to work in that world, I keep hearkening back to the one app that is kind of the super app that really describes to people how this whole app and how the cloud can work, and that's Evernote. And I know you're a big fan of it, Lindsay, but the fact where you clip little bits of content and it's available on your phone, it's available on your computer, it's available on your tablet, and through this new these interfaces, it'll also be available on your TV. That's kind of the peek at the future. But it is fascinating that it's all about the interface, and that's one thing that Apple's always been about. That it looks like at this point, at least if the rumor mill is to be believed, that the Apple TV is going to be based on a voice activated interface. That's certainly going to be something to see. And with that, we've run out of time for you guys. Thanks so much. Michael Kozlowski is the proprietor of GoodEReader.com. You read everything relating to the world of ebooks. Can be found there. Thank you very much for coming in, Mike.
No worries. My pleasure.
And Lindsay Smith, lindsaysmith.com, digital living evangelist. You can find her all over the web, certainly. I've noticed you're doing a lot of posting on the Best Buy blog. So if you're in the plugged-in blog at Best Buy, and Lindsay's doing a lot of posting there, so people should take a look for her sage commentary there. Thanks so much, Lindsay.
Thank you.
I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Joining me in studio now, Theo Horstel from London Drugs. And one of the topics that, when I did this show years ago, I would always, almost every week we'd be talking about antivirus this, security that. And it's kind of fallen off the radar. But it probably shouldn't have. What's happening in the world of antivirus?
Well, antivirus is not necessarily just antivirus anymore. The terms that you hear associated with antivirus would be PC security, internet security, cloud security. There's lots of different terms for it because I think what's happened is that this category has evolved from a very simple solution to a problem to a myriad of different problems that people experience on the internet specifically. Mm-hmm. So essentially you've got, as I mentioned, lots of different terms. So I think how it's evolved and even adding different things like PC tune-up to the mix. So all of these elements all come together, and the internet security providers are trying to, I think, reclassify the term antivirus. So the term antivirus may not necessarily be the best way to describe it anymore.
Yeah, so it's all about your overall security. Now, there was a couple of giants in the industry with Symantec and McAfee kind of leading the charge, and then it was really those two and then everybody else. Is the space still the same, or has the field evened out more?
Well, I think there's a lot more options available today. Those publishers, as you mentioned, are still doing very strongly, and they still provide a great service. However, there's different devices out there now. So I think certain people are stronger at different things. So you have Macs, for example. Mac security is now a big topic. Tablet mm-hmm. security. So I think everybody has their forte, and everybody obviously wants to become the solution. But I think competition breeds a good product, and there's lots of good product out there today.
So if somebody's deciding on their security strategy, what are you going to recommend? Should they look holistically and look at one vendor for providing the security for their desktop, their notebook, their phone, and their tablet, or should they be picking a different vendor for each of their devices?
Well, I think there's a lot of familiarity, that's the word I would use. So if you have been using Norton, for example, for many years, most people will stick to that. But I found in my personal experience trying different solutions from different providers, I think everybody has a different strength and weakness. Mm-hmm. They all are excellent products, But as I mentioned, getting into things like Android and iOS, those types of things, there's certain people do a better job. I'm not going to recommend one over the other.
No, that would be difficult. Yeah. Well, and I think the one recommendation that we can make is that when you choose one, stay with it for a period of time, at least for the term of the license, but probably for a couple of years is better than not. And the other thing is make sure you're constantly allowing updates to happen.
Sure.
Because it's only as good as how current it is.
Yeah. And one of the category is evolving as solutions to customers is people are using multiple devices now. So rather than buying a solution, as you mentioned, for one specific device, people own PCs, they own Macs, they own tablets. So one of the new trends is that the companies are providing solutions for all of the devices at the same time. So instead of looking at specifically for a PC or specifically for a Mac, you're now covered for whatever device you have. So folks like McAfee you'd mentioned before, they have a brand new product that it basically says, if you have a PC, a Mac, a tablet, all of those are covered. We're protecting you, the individual user. So it's a new sort of evolution on the way they're looking at the category. Rather than individual devices, it's now protecting the individual.
I haven't installed antivirus on my tablet. Is it something that I'm going to be thinking about soon, do you think? Or any security software on my tablet, per se?
That's a good question. So my personal opinion is that it really depends on what tablet you're using. So mm-hmm. there are lots of different operating systems out there. One in particular, and I'm not going to name which one it is, may be more prone to those types of security lapses than others. And I'll leave it at that.
No, actually,
not even that one.
Okay.
But I think some protection is better than no protection. And as they said for many years, Macs were immune to viruses. Not mm-hmm. the case anymore.
No, they're not. Well, in that, I don't think that's so much a case of the actual architecture of the system, which does have something to do with it, because basically the foundations of the Mac are probably going to be a little bit more secure because of the way it was built. But it's the market share. People weren't going to write an attack when Apple was mm-hmm. single digit market share. But now that we're seeing 15, 18, 20% of users using Macintosh devices, all of a sudden it's much more appealing to people who are out there causing mayhem.
Yeah, and as mentioned before, it's not necessarily the traditional sense of antivirus anymore.
Yes.
It's browsing more, security. It's clicking on a link within your Facebook that will hijack your information. It's
yes.
phishing that you're inadvertently entering in your banking information.
Yes.
So this software all provides that. So whether it's a tablet, that type of phishing activity, as I mentioned, that's the same as whether it's on a tablet, a Mac, a PC. So the software is sort of an intermediary barrier to make sure that you're not signing your life away, I guess, as it were.
As more things change, the more they stay the same, there's still dangers out there, and there's still one place people can go to get a lot of the answers, and that's if they stop by at their computer department, London Drugs. Your guys will walk them through what they need to know.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Theo.
Thank you.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. MacTech, brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Chris Miller from MacStation is in the house. Chris, how are you?
Sir?
Good?
I'm well. I'm very well.
I think what we should talk about today is upgrading to iOS 5 because everybody's thinking about it. Some people are afraid, like me,
mm-hmm.
because I've read online that it can take you up to like 36 hours to upgrade. I'm exaggerating.
Some people have problems with decimal points. It's all right.
But it can take a little bit of time to upgrade. What should people be thinking about? And kind of where's the threshold for upgrading your iPhone? Should be people upgrading their iPhone 3s? Everybody with a 4 should upgrade? Where does it fit for you?
If we're talking about hardware, I tend to say every other generation is for mobile devices is a great standard. For instance, if you have a 3GS to go to a 4S, perfect.
Oh, I get you. You're talking about upgrading to the iPhone 4S if you have an iPhone 3. I'm talking about iOS 5.
Oh, well, I mean, in
that
case,
if I should upgrade my OS
okay.
on my iPhone 4 or on my iPad, which I haven't done just because I'm afraid.
Fair enough.
I want it, but I'm afraid.
Well, I tend to pretty much encourage just keeping up with the upgrades. Mm-hmm. There's usually enough advantages and bits and pieces and little cool things that it's just almost always a good idea.
Okay, so how much time should we set aside? Because that's the other thing is I've had a busy week. I haven't had time to, I know I haven't had 3 or 4 consecutive hours if it took that long. How long should I expect to take to upgrade?
A little over an hour is a reasonable amount of time to expect. I mean, what you're going to want to do is first, A, back up the phone. Plug it into the machine, back it up through iTunes, make sure before you do anything else that all of your data is safe and secure. You always want to have a fallback point. Second, it's going to take, depending on your connection, anywhere between 20 and 40 minutes to actually download the update to iTunes. And then it's probably going to take 20 to 40 minutes, depending on your machine, to actually install and then restore all of your data back to your phone.
So the process, for those that don't know, is through iTunes. You don't do it directly with the phone. You go to in the iTunes store. There you download the upgrade. And then when you connect your phone, then you ask it to upgrade at that point.
Yeah, well, actually, you connect your phone, and then you see the upgrade button, and you push it.
Oh, okay. That's the way it works. But it's gonna work through. It's not going to be the phone by itself upgrading over the air. It's going to be while it's plugged into your computer. And it's going to be going through iTunes.
The machine is doing the heavy lifting. That's right.
Is this the last time that we're going to have that need of iTunes involved? Because Apple's going away from needing to plug your iPhone now into a computer. That's one of the things in iOS 5 that you can start it up, that you can basically enroll without plugging into a computer, correct?
Theoretically, yes. It's going to be the rest of the apps and the rest of the minor updates should be all over air, although I still have this feeling like for the big updates, for a big full new iOS, so let's say theoretically iOS 6, whenever that apparently is, whenever eventually that'll come, I still have this feeling like it's still going to be through the computer because it's so big and it requires the phone to do a full shutdown and a full just wipe and then a reinstall. That it may still require a computer. But for the most part, yeah, you're pretty much untethered.
Now, next week, we're going to talk about Siri because that's going to be that's not the first thing that I want to talk about is iOS 5. But other than Siri, which we will be talking about, what was your biggest pleasant surprise with iOS 5? Because you've had it for about a week now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been playing with it. I was just really happy it didn't slow my phone down. Like iOS, the last couple iOSs that I remember when I had my 3G, not my 3GS, but my 3G, and we booted to iOS 4, that sucker crawled. It made it useless. I would argue it's a little quicker.
See, that is an interesting point because there's a conspiracy theory out there that Apple releases upgrades and then they make it slow down on older hardware. I had somebody bending my ear about this all week. I'm doing a production of a funny thing happened on the way to the forum, and the guy playing Melee is going, I'm not doing it because it slows things down.
It does not.
So he's wrong.
Yep.
I'm going to tell him that.
Well, Melee's Gloriosus. He should be used to being wrong.
The character is wrong. But people have so the people that have experienced that business of upgrading on their phone to a newer operating system and having their phone seeming to chug along, that's legitimate, the fear that they have. But in this particular case, it's not really
legitimate,
not really
but in this case, unfounded. That is actually the reason why Siri is not on the phone, because it would require so much more space. So therefore, it's not included.
Chris Miller from Mac Station says, take an hour, back up, and then get on with iOS 5.
It's worth it.
Mac Tech is brought to you by Mac Station, your environmentally friendly solution. Trade up to the newest technology. Save taxes on the new machine. Give a second life to your old Mac. Mac Station, who said business and pleasure don't mix?
Wow, today's show has just flown by. Good guests, good show. That's what I always say, Art. That's one of my sayings.
That's
good,
when
good guests, good show.
Did you make that up?
I just made it up now, but it's a good saying.
I like it.
I'm going to say it again sometime.
I'm going to tweet it, and then I'll give you credit for it.
You're going to tweet it?
See if it blows up in the internet world.
There are two things that we haven't talked about today that we need to talk about. One is making sure, well, we did talk about this a little bit, but make sure you drop by our website and enter to win the Kobo Vox e-reader. We're going to be giving it away in December 7th show, so you got a month to enter. But tell your friends, tell your family, you can win one. And then if you need to, you could re-gift it. It would be awesome for re-gifting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's number one. Number two is November 19th and 20th at the Vancouver Convention Center is the Zoomer show for everybody over the age of 50. You're not invited, Art.
Oh, you don't have to be over 50.
Yeah, you should be. And anyways, it's November 19th and 20th. We're going to be there. We're going to be there as part of the AM 650 zone. We're going to have a little Dottotech booth. We've got the folks from Mac Station joining us. We're going to be talking. We're going to be really at a tablet zone. We're going to be looking at the iPad, the iPhone. We're going to be kind of dealing with those things. If you want to have a look, if you haven't bought one yet, if you want to play with it, if you want to see some apps, we're going to be there. So it's going to be at the AM 650 zone at the Zoomer show November 19th and 20th at the Vancouver Convention Center, the sales downtown. I'm looking forward to it. And if you need more information on it, you can just drop by am650radio.com. On behalf of Art Factor, I am Steve Dotto. Thanks so much for tuning in. We will see you next week right here on Dotto Tech.
DottoTech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.